As a young boy growing up, I was a little choir boy in the Church of England. Can you imagine that? Me with my ruff, you know, and my surplice and cassock, white cassock. And I used to sit and sometimes I would listen to the sermon. Often I would make paper aeroplanes out of the notices, but mostly I would try and listen to the sermon. I had different ways of doing that. Sometimes I would play preacher bingo. Have you ever tried that one? Okay, it's a good one to do with your friends. Before the service, you choose 16 words, okay? You don't do the and, but you know, you can have things like grace. There's a good one, you know, or Jesus is a given, you know. But every time that the preacher says those words, you can tick them off on your bingo card. It's a good way of listening to what the sermon is. You're going to do this now, aren't you? So I grew up as a child listening to lots and lots of sermons. And as a child, I began to realise that they would often have a certain pattern. The ones that really impressed me most were the ones that had 3 points, and they all began with the same letter. I thought that was really clever, and I really liked those ones and looked out for them. So today you've got a 3-point sermon with the points of the sermon all beginning with the same letter so that you can remember. And the letter is the letter Y, okay? So here's point one. Why me, Lord? And I know you're going to tell me that doesn't start with the letter Y. I know. Bear with me. Why me, Lord? Here is Jonah in the belly of his fish. Do you remember last week I said, you can take this literally if you wish, but I think you'll get more joy from it if you take it metaphorically. Because then you can apply it to your own situation if it fits as an allegory. So here he is, and he has reached rock bottom in his life. Things cannot get any worse from this point onwards. He has reached the bottom. Remember that he started and God said, arise and go, tell. But instead he goes down to Joppa, he goes down into the bottom of the boat, he goes from there into the sea and down and down and down and down. And he's reached the low point. It can't get any worse than this. And sometimes when you are in situations like that, and you are really struggling, and you are thinking to yourself, this cannot get any worse. My life cannot get any worse than it is now. Look at all the things that have been piled upon me. Look how deep I am in this. It's got so bad. And at that point, what do? There's nowhere else that you can turn but to cry out to God. And Jonah, from the belly of the fish, cries out to God. From the depths, I cry out to you, Lord. And sometimes God is the port of last resort, isn't it? You've tried everything else. Where else can you turn now? But simply to shout out to God, help. Why? What's going on here? And that cry of, why me, Lord, is pretty universal. People will ask that question if they've got a faith. Lord, why me? I thought I was your friend. I thought you were on my side. What's going on here? Why me, Lord? I've been a pretty decent chap. I've tried to do the right thing in my life. This is undeserved. I don't deserve this. Why? Why is this happening? And so people cry out to God in their distress, their bewilderment, their puzzlement at what's happening to them. Why? What's this about? Don't understand, God, why you could allow this to happen. Why? But you know, it's not just a question that I hear on the lips of people of faith. People who say that they don't believe in any kind of a God at all somehow also manage to cry out this same prayer as well. Why? Why is this happening? This is wrong. This isn't the way that things ought to be happening. I think it's ironic because the question why presupposes the idea that you think that there's an order to creation. And this goes against that orderedness of creation. And if you're thinking that there's an order in creation, then you're thinking there must be somebody or something that has ordered it, has made it that way. So when you say, why me? You're actually asking a deeply theological question. And even though people who say that they're atheists and don't believe in God, I wonder when they cry, why me, who they think they're crying to. But that's in parenthesis, okay? Why me? Actually, for Jonah, I think, would know pretty well why this is happening to him. It's the consequences of his actions. Remember, and I underline this again, in this allegory, in this story, using story language, it appears as if it's a punishment from God. But I don't wear that. I don't buy that. I don't think that that is the way in which God has ordered the universe. That when bad things happen, they sometimes happen to good people, they sometimes happen to bad people. But it's not as a punishment for what you've done or what you haven't done. But it is a consequence of your own actions. In other words, Jonah made his bed and now he's got to lie in it. Jonah chose his path. And now here come the consequences of his own actions. It's not that God's punishing him. It's just that he's now got to live with the consequences of the choices that he has made. So sometimes when we find ourselves in trouble, we realize, well, I know the path that I've taken to get here, and it's my fault. The trouble that I'm in now is because I said that thing back there, and I shouldn't have said it. And now here come the consequences. Or the trouble that I'm in is because on the spur of the moment, I bought something that I shouldn't have bought, and now the credit card has come in to bite me, you know, but it's my fault. I shouldn't have bought that thing in the first place. And so sometimes the consequences we know are fairly and squarely on my shoulders. The question, why me? Why have I got this credit card bill that I'm going through and this debt that I'm weighed down by? Well, actually, I know. I shouldn't have done it. Sometimes, however, it's got nothing to do with me. It's not my fault. You know, why when I was 21 and playing football, did I break my ankle and end up 10 days in hospital in traction? You know, why was that? Was it because I stole a Mars bar when I was 19, you know, and that's kind of like the consequence? No, it's got nothing to do with that. Of course not. You know? So why was it? Well, it was just that the other footballer wanted the ball more than I did, you know. But is it... Whose fault is it then? Sometimes it's not your own fault. Sometimes it can be the fault of other people. In this case, Jonah, you know, the sailors on board ship are saying, what's happening here? Why are we going through this storm? Why us? What? It's Jonah's fault. In other words, it's not the sailor's fault itself. You know, it's somebody else's fault. And often we have to live with the consequences of other people's decisions and other people's actions. Doesn't seem fair, but that's life, isn't it? We live with the consequences of the decisions that other people make. Whether it's right from the top in government and the decisions that are made there, or lower down, or the people that are nearest to us, or whatever. But sometimes it's not our fault. We're living with the consequences of other people. And sometimes, hey, life sucks. And that's it. It just is. Why me? My mum, being personal again now, my mum, when she was 16, was first diagnosed with cancer. She lived right through into her 80s with cancer. Every now and again, every 6 months or so, she had to go back to the doctor. She had problems with her thyroid. They had to cut that out so that the whole of one side of her face was paralyzed, and she lived with that all of her life. But she never once asked, why me? Why me? No. She said, why not me? If somebody's got to have this rare form of cancer, well, one in a million. Well, why not me? Why not me? Hear me right here, folks. I want to say very clearly that if you are in distress, the right thing to do is to cry out to God. To let it all out. To tell God how you're feeling. Lord, I don't understand this. Lord, I'm struggling here. Lord, I'm out of the depths, I cry to you. And that's dead right. But having said all of that, then you have to say, okay, now that I am in this situation, what do I do about it? How do I move on? The old cliche says that when times of trouble come your way, it can either lead you to become better or bitter. Your choice. Do you let it screw you up and make, why me? This isn't fair, this isn't right. Or do you move on beyond that and say, right, let's deal with this. Let's move on. Let's cope with this with the help of God. And I hope that God isn't just the port of last resort, but the port of first resort. That it's God that you go to, not when you've reached rock bottom and there's nowhere else to turn, but right there at the very beginning, an everyday experience, an everyday conversation. Lord, here I am. Good morning, God. This is where I am. This is what I'm doing. This is the situation I find myself in today. And I know that you are there with me. Why me? A legitimate question. I don't want to say to people, don't ask that question. That's a stupid question. No. If that's what you want to ask God, then feel free to ask God. Lord, I don't understand this, but I know that you're here with me. So, point one. Jonah cries out from the belly of the fish, why me, Lord? Here's point two. And point two is, why me, Lord? Can you see they all start with the same letter of the alphabet? Why me, Lord? But slightly different. Can I skew this one round? This time I'm not asking why am I suffering? Why am I going through a time of trouble or trial? Let's go back to the whole story of Jonah. Jonah has been given a difficult task to do. A task that he doesn't want to do. And he runs. And sometimes God calls upon people to do difficult, hard jobs that they don't want to do. Why? Why me? Why are you asking me to do that job? All the way through in the Old Testament, you get a line of Old Testament prophets. And each one of them, starting with Moses, gives a valid reason why they are the least able to do the job that they're being asked to do. Moses says, why are you asking me? You know, I've got a terrible stammer and stutter and I can't speak and I don't even know who you are. We've only just met and we haven't been introduced properly. And he comes up with a handful, at least, of excuses why Moses can't do the job that is, go tell the Pharaoh, let my people go. No, I can't do that. All the way through, whether it's Isaiah, I'm a man of unclean lips and I live among people of unclean lips. I'm not the person to do this job. Jeremiah, I'm too young. Moses, I'm 80, I'm too old. Whatever it is, you know, people keep giving the excuses as why they're not the right person to do the job. You've got the wrong person here. Why me? I'm sure there are better people, better equipped, better able to do the job that you're asking to be done. I'm not the person to do it, Lord. Look somewhere else. Here am I. Send them. Why me, Lord? I think there are a number of different answers to that question. The first is, perhaps God knows that you are the right person to do this job. Remember, you are unique. There's no one else with the skills, the abilities, the aptitudes, the position that you are in. Only you have the relationship with the people around you and the relations that you have. Nobody else quite has the same network that you have and the same influence. So often what's happening when people say, no, I can't do that, I'm not educated enough, I don't know the Bible enough, I don't know this, I don't know that, it's really a kind of a false humility that says, I'm ever so humble. And it's a false humility that says, yeah, I don't want to do the job, actually. Have you ever had that, you know, where you want some building work done at your house, and so you get a range of different quotations from the builder? You know which builders don't really want the job, don't you? You know which ones don't want it. They don't get back to you for a start. When they've looked at the job and you say, well, give us a quote, and it never comes. Well, you know. And sometimes we don't get back to God because we don't want the job. Don't ask me, Lord, there's somebody better to do it. But that's a false humility. Maybe you are the person to do it. As a teacher, sometimes there were a number of different teaching strategies or different mechanisms or different ways of approaching a particular subject to get the children into sometimes, you know. And there were different ways. Sometimes you could ease them in gently. Start them off quietly and easily. And that was a good way in, you know, and they kind of thought, oh yeah, I can do this. This is good. Yeah, I build up the confidence. You know, sometimes, and this is the harsh one, what do they say? You just push them in at the deep end. Just get on with it. Here it is. Sort it out. And sometimes we could give some children, a group of children, a particular problem and say, that's it. I just want you to work out that problem. I'm not going to give you any other help. There it is. Get on with it. In at the deep end. And sometimes you do your best at learning and the quickest learning. You know the first route. Let's do it gently. Let's just work out. That takes weeks. Building up, slowly building up confidence. In at the deep end. Here's a problem. Get on with it. By the end of the lesson, they've learnt it. And sometimes God does that with us, doesn't he? He pushes us in at the deep end and says, get on with it. Here's a problem. I want you to sort it out. Do it. Get on. Ah. And it's done. It just takes one word. We've done what we've told. We've been to see the person and talked to the person that we were really trepidatious about going to see. And now we've done it. Hey, I never thought that I could do that. And now, hey, I've done it. And you've learned very quickly that you can do that. You could say that. And it wasn't really as bad as you thought it was going to be in. And so in at the deep end is sometimes a good way to learn, isn't it? And sometimes God, I think in his wisdom, says, yeah, get on with it. And you know, when you do that, who does the glory go to? It's when we are weak that he becomes strong, so that the glory goes to him. We can't say, hey, it was my courage, it was my bravery, it was my excellence, it was my learning, it was my skill that did that, because you didn't bring any of that into the situation anyway. It's got to go back to God, isn't it? So sometimes God is going to ask you to do difficult things. And maybe you are the right person because there's nobody else that has quite the relationship with that person that you do. And you are in the best position. You might not feel it, but you are. Why me? Well, God's got a good plan. And he knows what he's doing. And do you know what? Maybe you're not plan A. Maybe there have been some other people that he's asked to do that job. They've also backed out. And now it's you. Are you going to hear the call? Are you going to do what God asks you to do? Are you going to learn to trust, learn to obey, learn to lean on God? All of these things as you do what God has asked you to do. Why does he choose Jonah? Jonah doesn't want to do the job. And yet at the end, Jonah arises and learns his lesson, doesn't he? He learns something very deep, and he comes out of it a much wiser prophet than he enters into it. So why me? Point one. Point two, why me? You've guessed what point three is. Why me? Why me? I've said before, some of you will remember this, that I will listen to most, if not all, types of music apart from Wagner and Tammy Wynette. You've got to have some limit somewhere, haven't you, really? I'll listen to most other things. Country music is pushing things. Country and Western are beginning to kind of get a little bit edgy. Parsifal and Lohengrin, parts of that, I'm kind of okay, that's fair. But most of the stuff in between. But country music, okay, let's stick with country music for a moment. Kris Kristofferson? I'll listen to Kris Kristofferson, that's okay. That's kind of like the acceptable end of country and western. He's got a song, and I won't try and imitate him, although I could, that goes, "Why me, Lord?" You can sing along if you want. Do you know it? No? Okay. "Why me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the blessings I've known? Why me, Lord? What have I ever done? What did I ever do that was worth love from you? What have I ever done to deserve this?" See how that's now shifted around? Instead of saying, "This pain, this suffering that I'm going through, what did I ever do to deserve this?" It's now looking at all the blessings that God has given me and said, "Why me, Lord? Why have you blessed me? I don't deserve that. The love that you've showered upon me in your son Jesus, I don't deserve that." Remember, I come back to that verse at the end of, as Jonah pours out this mishmash of kind of references, half references, back to the Psalms. That's good, isn't it? That he can still remember verses from the Psalms. Yeah. Do you remember Terry Waite being handcuffed to a radiator for all those years? No books, no... All he could go back to was the Psalms that he had learnt by rote. And Jonah does something very similar. He goes back to those Psalms and he kind of half quotes them. And at the end of it, out of all of that, as the people were going to throw him, the sailors were going to throw him over the side, they say, "Who are you?" "Well, I'm a Hebrew, me, I worship the God." There hasn't been any worship so far until you get to the belly of the whale. You know, God spoke to him in chapter 1, verse 2. Jonah hasn't spoken to God yet until we get to chapter 2 and he's in the belly of the whale. And what does he do? He pours out his heart to God, but at the end of it, "Yet will I praise you." You know that verse at the end of Habakkuk? Habakkuk 3:17, you'll know it. Come on, okay. Habakkuk 3:17, you know, there's no figs on the fig tree. There's no grapes on the vine. There's no corn in the cornfield. There's no cattle in the cowshed. "Yet will I praise you. Even though the world's going to hell in a handcart, yet will I praise you. Even though my world is collapsing around me, even though I am in the belly of the fish, I'm still going to praise you." I said that the book of Jonah is really a book about resurrection, about new life. Where does resurrection begin for Jonah? It begins at the point where he says, "Yet will I praise you. I'm going to sing my praise to you. I'll sing my song of thanksgiving to you." And that's the point that things begin to turn around for Jonah. There's power in praise. It's amazing what praising can do. And even in the middle of adversity, it's tough. It's tough. Yet there are things to praise God for. Again, a personal point. On Thursday, I took part in my father's funeral. What's to praise God for? The person that you have loved has died and you are separated from them. Your heart is grieving and heavy. Yet will I praise you. I praise God for my childhood and the happy childhood that my father provided for me. I praise God for the man that my father was and all that he gave to me and all that he taught me. Most of all, I praise God that my father gave me my faith and passed his faith on to me. Even in the belly of the fish, in the middle of grief, yet will I praise. Yet will I praise. And it's tough. And it's hard. And I don't say this lightly. And if you're going through a tough time now, maybe you can still give praise to God for something. Why me? Why me in the middle of pain and suffering? Why me when there's a tough call, a tough job to be done? And why me? Why grace? Why does God love even me? Yet I will praise. We're going to sing a song about God's faithfulness to us and the way in which we call out to God again and again. You are my rock in times of trouble. You lift me up when I fall down. All through the storm, your love is the anchor. I just suggest we remain seated and sing this through as we lead into a time of prayer, as our time of meditation and thought and prayer. So, faithful one, you my rock of peace, Lord of all, I depend on you. 6, 2, 8. Let's stay seated and sing this prayerfully.